It is Peace Officer Day today, and we've got we've got a very small group. We've got a group of one, but we have a very important guest with us. Colin Letty is across the council. Good morning, Colin.
Hello, Steve.
And we've also got the acting chief of police of the Burlington Police Department, Dame, just about 2 weeks ago. It was he's Jeff Klein. Jeff has been a regular guest on this show, and he has, again... Jeff, what was your position before, directly before becoming acting chief?
I was the major of operations.
Okay. And so that would that be where was that? I know there's two majors, is that right?
Correct. We have a major of operations and a major of administrative services.
Okay. All right. And and then it was Jim Furno, you know, nominated or I guess what projected you or I guess suggested or proposed to the council that they accept you as the acting chief. Did you did you go through an interview process with Jim, or was it just did he just come down and say, well, let's see, I think you look like the best guy, or how did it work out?
No, Jim and I have had conversations regarding the position and the direction of the department, where he would like to see it now and in the future. And throughout the course of those conversations, he asked if I'd be willing to accept the acting chief role as we continue the application process, and I told him I'd be more than happy to do that.
You know, we were talking just before, well, not on air, but we were talking before we went on the air, that I said I could not remember in all the years that I've been here, and that's a long time, I could not remember any chief that had not been a person that had been connected to Burlington's police department prior to becoming chief and moving up within the inner circle or through the ranks, so to speak. You said that I missed one apparently, but there have been very few. Would that be that's not an understatement, is it?
No, not at all. I think part of the beauty of Burlington is when we hire people, we look for them to stay here for the long term. We've been very fortunate with the hires that we've had during my career. The guys that I started with 29, 30 years ago, most of them are still here if they haven't retired already. So I think that's a credit to the way our organization does business, and it's a credit to the way that the city treats us, not only as officers, but as citizens.
And, you know, as you look at things that have changed in the police department, obviously there's been you've seen a lot of changes over the years. Obviously, communication has changed dramatically. A new police station, that's a rather dramatic change. You were in that little tinderbox, weren't you, down there on Valley Street, right?
Yeah, when I first started, we shared with the fire department in the building that they're still in now, and then we moved to the National Research Bureau building on North 3rd Street, and now we're in the old U.S. Bank building. So.
And the National Research building was a building that was better left unsaid, right?
It got us through a rough time, but we're incredibly happy with the facility that we have right now, so we're thankful to the city and the citizens that we ended up where we have.
Jeff, how many officers do you have in the police department right now?
We're allocated for 46 sworn right now. After Chief Kramer retired, we also have Officer Greg Hoffer retiring tomorrow. So we are in the process currently of hiring two more to return that staffing level to 46.
We've talked often about the fact that, the days, in fact, I mentioned it, I think, when you were here. I said in the days when you tested for, I believe, was it, you go through a civil service exam. That's usually the very first thing. I believe Chief Kramer, or the former Chief Kramer, who's now retired, I guess, said that he had, I think, about 250 people tested at the same time he did. Do you remember having any idea? Can you remember how many people tested when you did?
There were close to 200 when I tested. 29 years ago, we had our test out at SEC, and we filled up an auditorium there.
The times have changed, though, haven't they?
Absolutely, they have. Times change in a lot of occupations. It's not just law enforcement. People become more interested in technology than they do in human interaction. That's just the nature of the beast. We look for people that are continuing to be interested in that human interaction and want to make a difference in the community.
And we also talk about the fact that because you have a smaller, well, you're going to have a smaller pool. There's no doubt about it, right? So you need to have, so finding quality officers within a smaller pool becomes more of a challenge, doesn't it?
We've been fortunate to have a great relationship with Western Illinois University. Their law enforcement program, in my opinion, is one of the best in the Midwest. We've had a lot of officers that have come from Western. We've had several that have come from St. Ambrose and the Quad Cities. So those law enforcement programs in the colleges around Southeast Iowa, and as we move a little bit further north, continue to be good feeder programs for us.
Okay, so you've had pretty good success. So small pool, but good success. I guess you're fortunate to be in a community like this. Would you say that's a truth, I guess?
Absolutely. We're very fortunate that a lot of the youth in our community are interested in what we do. We've had several people that have gone through our Explorer program and then became officers here. That interest continues, so we continue to foster that. Our officers that are school resource officers in the high school and the middle school, we continue to have that positive interaction. The school district has been a great supporter of us, and we like to feel like we support them as well. So that continuing relationship with our youth can only continue to breed future officers.
As you look at the possibility of becoming the full chief or not acting chief, but the actual police chief of the city of Burlington, do you see any changes that you'd like to make? Do you see any administrative things you'd like to do?
Currently, I kind of look at myself as an outsider. It's always been the role of the chief to assess what he has within. I don't think that making changes just for the sake of change right away is effective.
Okay.
There's still a learning curve when you change positions. Even moving from lieutenant to major, there was still that curve, understanding what your new responsibilities are. The beauty of what we have in Burlington is we all have great relationships with each other. It becomes incumbent upon the chief to understand how each person is successful, what traits they have that can augment us as a department.
And as you look back at this past year, this has not been a normal year under any circumstances. What's been the greatest challenge that you've had to face?
We've been very fortunate in Southeast Iowa. I know Iowa City and Des Moines have dealt with protests that we have not. The community has had a few peaceful marches, which the emphasis on the word peaceful has been great. I think that speaks to the community that we live in. The greatest challenge is dealing with all the changes nationwide. Eventually, the changes that start on the coasts end up trickling to the Midwest. So to a degree, we have that advantage where we can be prepared as we see what's taking place on the coast that filters toward the center of the nation. We can prepare ourselves for any of those challenges that come forward.
You know, I think we talked a lot about how the change in the way, I guess particularly, disputes are settled. I use the adage or the story that I believe I think it was Mike Johnstone that said many years ago. He said, you know, we got a call that there's a fight going on. We figured it was a fist fight or somebody maybe was hitting somebody over the head with a pool cue. and now you pretty much have to expect, or at least you have to be prepared, that there's firearms that are involved in that. Is that a blanket statement, or is that too broad of a statement?
I think, again, we're fortunate in the community that we live in because we get to deal with people on a daily basis, whether it be business owners, whether it be just general members of the community. We have an understanding of who they are and what their expectations are of us. If we've been in an area before where there has been violence, we can be prepared for that. But it gets back to where I spoke to earlier about the movement from the coast to the center of the country. If we're prepared for anything that can take place, I think that serves us well. If we go in with no expectations, I think we're not serving
the
community.
All right. Well, obviously, things in a lot of the major cities, as you look at those things in Portland, you look at the things going on in Seattle, as it is, you look at the things that have been occurring in other major cities, do you have any explanation what's going on here and why this is going on? Somebody, I think I asked the question, I think a month or two ago, I said, is it restlessness? Is it like we've got everybody's got itching powder or something, or is it COVID fatigue, or why would it be going on now? Why?
It could be a little bit of all of that. We're in an election year and people have different opinions about the way the country should be run. You throw COVID into the mix, and for 6 months, people have been on edge. Unemployment has gone up and back down. Those people that invest in the stock market have had to deal with the volatility of the market. Some days it's up, some days it's down, and that can add stress to anyone. I think the biggest part of what we're dealing with right now is the support that people feel from their elected officials. In Burlington, we have tremendous support from our city council and from our city manager. You referenced Seattle and Portland.
Yeah.
I don't know that they feel the support from the mayors, from the elected officials in that part of the country. I think that's what makes us different. We feel incredibly supported by our elected officials, and to a degree, it makes our job easier.
Well, I think, particularly we were talking about officers, and I know that we had a situation. Minneapolis is a situation, a tragedy in Minneapolis, and an officer, kneeling on somebody's neck. I think Steve Parker was in here, longtime McGruff the crime dog, and also a longtime member of the sheriff. He said a lot of these things, you had to do what you had to do, but he said that would never have happened under his watch or under any other watch that he's aware of in this area. What goes on, I guess? Is it a training issue? What causes something like that to happen?
Well, I think it's more than just a training issue. I think, unfortunately, there's often a rush to judgment because of social media, the way it exists right now. People constantly thirst for the latest information. And when you only have a snippet of that information, you may not get the entire story. So when you have a picture of an officer kneeling on someone's neck, you have no idea what took place prior to that. You have no idea what took place during that incident. You only have that one picture or that 1 minute of video.
Or any history that's gone on with that, with the individual as well. We had a situation just a few weeks ago. Somebody walked up. It was in Los Angeles. Somebody walked up and just simply fired three or four shots right into, officers just sitting in their police cruiser. What's going on with something like that, Jeff?
That was in Compton, California, and they have made an arrest in that case. Individual that they arrested has gang affiliations, and obviously gangs and police don't always mix. Those officers were in proximity to their station. It was just an isolated incident that fortunately was caught on video. Obviously not fortunate that it happened, but fortunate enough that it was caught on video so that officers could follow up and make that arrest. The society that we live in, again, we are very different here in the Midwest than other places are across the nation. We continue to be fortunate that we don't have those types of incidents. But again, we continue to be vigilant and be prepared, not only for our safety, but our job is to continue to provide safety for the rest of the community.
I know that there's no effort to defund police in Burlington, but we hear about this on the coast. We hear about it down in Miami. We heard about it in New York. We heard about it, obviously, in Seattle and in Portland and also in the Los Angeles areas. What's going on there? Why would someone want to defund? Defunding police, though, I think is maybe a misnomer. It's a reorganization, I think, is what people are calling for. Is that right?
Well, when you referred to Minneapolis earlier, I'll use that example because that was the first community where the defund the police movement really came from. There was a news article this week where citizens are now approaching the city council, and the city council is now saying that probably wasn't the best cause of action. It gets back to, you are never going to completely satisfy everyone. And those people that are not satisfied, that make the most noise, often get the greatest amount of press. So in that situation, I don't think that the majority of the citizens of Minneapolis were heard. And now it's those majority of citizens that want the police protection because they feel like it no longer exists. So it gets back to, we need to serve everyone as a whole. We don't pick and choose. In Minneapolis's case, I think they picked, they chose, and they ran with the defund the police movement. And now I think they're finding that that probably wasn't the best course of action.
I've been to Seattle. Seattle's a beautiful city, and Portland's a beautiful city. What's going on to see a situation where they've got a zone in Seattle where it's like a police-free zone? I'm thinking, what possibly can be going on there, and how does something like that even occur? Why do people stand for something like that?
You know, it's difficult for me to speak to that. I've never been to Seattle, and I cannot fathom why anyone would allow that to happen. I can't fathom why anyone would want to live in that environment. And I think there were some people that lived in apartment complexes within that CHAZ zone that, as it continued on, they felt threatened by that presence, and they wanted the police to return to that area. So, again, it gets back to our service has to be to everyone, not just to one segment.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a break for news. We've got Jeff Klein with us. Our phone lines are open at 754-1490. Jeff is the acting chief of police. We've got some other things to talk about, and we will be doing that coming up in just a few minutes.
Friday night is football night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. This Friday, join Scott Mason and John Flaherty as Burlington travels to Washington. Brought to you by Rhinesmith's Flooring America, the Pilot Grove Savings Bank, Bob Dodds Insurance, Kirk Massner Family Dentistry, Heath Lorenz, the Danville State Savings Bank, Courtesy Door, Ritter's Garden Center, and Standard of Beaverdale. BHS Football, 7 p.m. Friday night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and KBUR.com.
Mr. Clean. Most people know that Mr. Clean Magic Eraser removes crayon and scuff marks from walls, but did you know it even cleans tough kitchen and bathroom messes that are sometimes tough to tackle? Just wet, squeeze, and erase gray soap scum on your bathtub. Erase cloudy hard water spots in your shower. Erase burnt on stovetop messes. So for all your tough kitchen and bathroom messes, try Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. Mr. Clean.
If there was ever a place for everything, it has to be the Home Depot's Pack Store Save event. Now with exclusive HDX black and yellow tough totes in various sizes from as little as $4.98 each. Safely store everything from seasonal items to family keepsakes. At this price, these totes are well within reach. Go to homedepot.com/storage. All your storage solutions in one place. The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Valid through September 7th while supplies last.
As corona restrictions are slowly being lifted, it's time to start getting back to normal responsibly. Fact is, Greater Burlington local businesses are hurting. While you were stuck at home, they were told to close up shop. Now that stores are able to open, they are eager to welcome you back with open arms from a safe 6 feet away. Stop into one of our amazing restaurants and enjoy a delicious lunch or dinner. Visit your favorite shop and treat yourself to something special. Or call a service professional to do that job you've been waiting to get done. You can help stimulate the Greater Burlington economy. Get the items you need every day and still practice social distancing. Local businesses understand this is the new normal. They want you to feel comfortable while you shop. Be on the lookout for the orange open for business signs around town. These signs show you members that are open and working hard to keep their business clean and ready for you to shop. Brought to you by the members of the Chamber of Commerce, a division of the Greater Burlington Partnership, making connections, building community.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
News brought to you by Kelly O'Shea's Pub and Grill, featuring a full menu including seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, and appetizers, as well as nightly specials. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
And now the latest from the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. Two polling locations in Des Moines County have changed temporarily for the 2020 general election. The location of Precinct 2, Autumn Heights, has been relocated to Optima Life Services at 910 Cottonwood Court, Suite 1001. The second change is the precinct for Flint River Township and City of Middletown. The location is now at Middletown City Hall at 120 Mechanic Street. A full list of voting precincts can be viewed on KBUR.com. The former director of an Iowa daycare center has been sentenced to prison for illegally taking more than $110,000 from the center and using the money on video games, clothing, and other items. The Des Moines Register reports that 49-year-old Christine Daniel of Kellogg pled guilty to the theft of a federal program last year and was sentenced Monday in federal court to 4 months in prison and another 4 months in home detention. A 3-year supervised release was also ordered once her sentence concludes. Daniel admitted to stealing money from Tama County Daycare Incorporated while serving as executive director. The murder trial for a Cedar Rapids man accused of killing another man over a pack of cigarettes has been moved to 2021. The Cedar Rapids Gazette reports that the first-degree murder trial for 37-year-old Jermaine Walker was originally scheduled for November 2nd. A judge agreed to reset the trial to January 25th at the request of Walker's lawyer. Walker is accused of fatally shooting 31-year-old Wayne Jones of Cedar Rapids on November 2nd of 2019. Authorities say Walker was at a party smoking other people's cigarettes when Jones called him out for being, quote, cheap, prompting the shooting. An Iowa park will be renamed to honor a Meskwaki activist, removing a derogatory term that has long been part of the park's name. The Linn County Conservation Board on Monday said the name of Squaw Creek Park will change to Wanatee Park. The park in Marion was originally named in 1964. The Conservation Board says in a news release that because the word squaw is offensive, it decided to remove its use in public buildings and spaces. The new name honors Jean Adeline Morgan Wanatee, who died in 1996. She was inducted into the Iowa Women's Hall of Fame in 1993. From the KBOR Newsroom, I'm Colin Letty.
News. I'm Lillian Wu. More sharp words after a first debate some call chaotic. The Commission on Presidential Debates considering changes
to ensure more orderly discussion of the issues. But the Trump campaign taking issue with that, saying, quote, President Trump was the dominant force. Now Joe Biden is trying to work the refs. They shouldn't be moving the goalposts.
Fox's John Roberts. Former Vice President Joe Biden calling the president's conduct a national embarrassment and a suspect. Deontay Murray's pled not guilty to ambushing two Los Angeles County sheriffs earlier this month as they sat inside their squad car.
It was that unrelated carjacking 2 weeks prior that led to his capture. Murray allegedly stole a black Mercedes and shot the driver. When police later spotted him driving and gave chase, he allegedly threw the handgun out the window that matches the one used to shoot the deputies.
Fox's William Lajeunesse. America's listening to Fox News.
Weather outside is beautiful, and that means it's patio season. It's time for sun, fun, and exceptional food and drinks, only at Kelly O'Shea's. Dine in for fresh summer delights, or use their carry-out and curbside pickup options, available on Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays, to keep you warm and happy during the day's end. Check out their menu at Kelly O'Shea's Pub's Facebook page to see what's to offer. Not your average pub, not the average way. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Well, we've had a shower go through, and we may see another one. Widely scattered showers still possible. Isolated showers are calling it. Otherwise, look for partly sunny skies today. A high around 60 degrees. Winds picking up from the northwest, gusting to 25 this afternoon. Partly cloudy tonight, low down to 38. Mostly sunny Friday, 56. Partly cloudy Friday night, low to 39. And right now, we've got skies, partly sunny skies, 53 degrees.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. A new month and a new quarter and a new stimulus bill in this pandemic, maybe. Investors are hopeful. Stocks are popping on Wall Street out of the gate this morning. Talks are on in Washington. Another nearly 1 million people applied for unemployment benefits last week. That number is huge, but it's been edging lower. 837,000 people applied last week. Tomorrow, we get the big government jobs report for September. And that number this morning does not include any of this week's cuts as companies continue to slice. Disney cutting 30,000, Shell 9,000, the airlines furloughing more than 30,000 people this morning as bailout money runs out. Watch PepsiCo shares today. They were higher after a strong quarterly report. More people are buying its snack brands like Frito-Lay products in the pandemic. And Ford announcing a restructuring along with a price cut for the all-electric Mustang Mach-E crossover. Jessica Ettinger, CNBC.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Stock market have you nervous with all the massive fluctuations? With the markets returning to pre-coronavirus levels, unemployment rates shifting, and the upcoming election, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text money to 411-411 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Get what you need to stay ahead of market trends and find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented technology analyzes huge quantities of global data in seconds. Stop guessing. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance. Text the word money to 411-411 and experience Vantage Point for free. Text money to 411-411 so you can grow your capital now with Vantage Point. Don't wait. Text money to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Hey, Peter Pig.
Yeah, Henry Hogg?
Senator Joni Ernst said she was going to make Washington squeal.
But after 6 years in power, the only thing squealing are Iowans from higher drug and health care costs.
Well, Iowa expanded Medicaid in 2014, but in 2015, Ernst voted against maintaining the federal share of Medicaid at 100%, paid for by closing tax loopholes for the wealthy companies that move investments overseas.
And in 2017, Ernst voted against legislation co-sponsored by the late Senator John McCain to allow individuals to safely import prescription drugs from Canada, creating major savings for consumers.
Well, since going to the Senate, Ernst has bellied up to the trough and taken almost $155,000 in campaign cash from the drug company. And her record on health care has earned her flunking grades from the American Public Health Association.
Joni went from castrating us to gutting the middle class.
Indivisible Action is responsible for the content of this advertising. Paid for by Indivisible Action and not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. Indivisible.org.
The Chad Benson Show.
With Trump, he lays it all out there. He's transparent, and everybody's like, he's not. He is. He doesn't have a filter, which is bad. And for years, on both sides, we've all said, you know what? I wish we had presidents that were, you know, weren't always so careful. I wish we had politicians that maybe spoke their mind. What do you really think? Well, you've got one, and you don't like it.
The Chad Benson Show. Chad Benson, weeknights from 8 to 11 on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. Everything you need to know and more on AM and FM. All your favorite programs and personalities with a cleaner, clearer signal and a larger nighttime coverage area. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do?
And welcome back. It is Jeff Klein. He's the acting police chief of the city of Burlington and, of course, a candidate to be the chief of police. And we've had a record of the acting chief becoming the chief in many cases. And so we are joined by Jeff. Hey, Jeff, there's a number of things. We were talking about a situation at Louisville, a no-knock warrant, and this great hubbub and the rioting that goes on. And I think I just heard you say that was not a no-knock warrant. Where did that information come from? How did that get? Is it a distorted information piece that happened, or what happened there?
You know, it's difficult to say. As Colin and I were talking, information comes to Southeast Iowa and to the Midwest from those other locales. So it's difficult for us to get a completely true picture on what really happened. As I alluded to earlier in reference to the Minneapolis incident, information comes out piecemeal. People are constantly looking for the here and the now without being willing to wait and get the complete story. So we're kind of at a disadvantage if the incident doesn't happen here. We're only going to get the information that is desired to be put out by those locales.
And we also were discussing how that can also be a factor in a lot of the big riots and outrage, and we can see it's just blind rage because they only have that one bit of information to go on, and they form their opinion so quickly they don't have time to sit and research.
You know, it seems that the use of federal troops in some of these larger cities has seemed to exacerbate the problem. I don't know if that's a good way to put it or not, but it seems like it inflames, maybe even causes the rioting or whatever, or whatever rioting groups. And frankly, we don't know who's really. It looks to me like we've got there's a lot of people in there that are not. You take a peaceful protest, and then all it takes is that peaceful protest can get hijacked by all kinds of groups, can't it?
That's a true statement. I think if you look at a lot of the locations where the rioting has taken place, it hasn't been the citizens of those communities. It's been external forces that have come in and caused the grief in those areas. So when you look back at what has taken place in Seattle, what has taken place in Portland, other locations such as that, it's not those citizens. Those citizens want to live a quiet and peaceful life, but it's the extremes that want to come in, make the national headlines, and continue to cause trouble.
One of the things that has been a big problem in for law enforcement, and I know Mike Johnstone was particularly adamant about this one, and that is mental health services available for people. You know, right now there's not a lot of, you know, the community-based mental health system. Let's say shut down both Clarinda and Mount Pleasant. that meant that law officers, peace officers, now I know that you've got, I believe you've got a special department, is that right, that is specifically designed to work for mental health issues, is that right?
Yeah, we have what's called the CIT program, the Crisis Intervention Team, and we have officers that are trained. Generally, it's four at a time. We've got another training class coming up this month. Sergeant Zahn runs our program, and it has been incredibly successful. Those officers are trained on how to specifically deal with individuals who have mental health issues or are in some type of mental health crisis. They can provide referrals to them. They can contact counselors that maybe would not be available at that time to these people who are suffering, but they can make those referrals to help them out moving forward.
As we talked about the biggest issues during COVID-19, and we talked domestic violence. Is that a problem? Is that a bigger problem now because of this COVID situation?
I think a lot of the problems that we've dealt with have been exacerbated by COVID. When you require people to stay home for long periods of time, when unemployment goes up, frustrations go up, narcotics and alcohol use go up, and when you combine all of those things, it's a recipe for disaster. So when we arrive at a scene like that, cooler heads are always going to prevail. So we're trying to look at what the underlying issue is and address that underlying issue so that we can provide help for the people we deal with.
And I know that there is no such thing as a standard call, is there? I mean,
that's correct. There's no such thing as routine in law enforcement. Every call has a different component to it.
Okay. Have police procedures changed at all in the way that you handle some of these calls?
The training is constantly changing. As issues evolve, we have to understand what caused those issues. As trends move nationally, we continue to receive training information from nationally reputable sources, and we continue to provide that training for our officers. Governor Reynolds just signed a bill that required officers to complete bias and de-escalation training. So we have two members of our command staff that are going to attend that training. I believe it's the end of this month or in November. So they will bring that training back to our officers, and that will allow us to complete that mandated training and continue to be better officers in dealing with those situations.
Colin can go in. He had the story on first.
Yes,
but you
this
had,
was...
Remember the story down in the Keokuk or Hamilton, Illinois? And also the story, we've had two different cases where someone has been handcuffed and put in the back of a squad car,
and then they subsequently got their handcuffs to the front of their body and proceeded to steal the police car, hit an officer, crash it, and then one was arrested, the other one ran away.
Well, what isn't there a security device or a bar
or a security partition
there that
in our squad cars we have those cages, we have the partitions between the front and the rear seat. Again, it gets back to we don't know the totality of what took place in those situations. In a smaller community, they may be the only officers on the scene. So if they're having to deal with an arrest, securing that individual, and then if they have to deal with the vehicle, if they have to deal with witness information, now that person is left in their squad car by themselves for that period of time. In Burlington, we have the luxury of any time an arrest is made, we're going to have one or two extra officers there. The county is the same way. They've got a couple of deputies on duty. West Burlington, we can all help each other. Those smaller rural communities where they only have one officer can often make it difficult for them.
Okay, so I'm going to guess that we don't have any sheriff's representatives here, but the sheriff's department has to provide law enforcement for an awful lot of these smaller communities that really don't have either unincorporated or they don't have anybody there, or maybe no more than one officer. Your area is a little more limited. I know you do work with West Burlington Police, though, right?
Correct. If anyone from either West Burlington or the Sheriff's Department calls us and asks for assistance, by all means, we're going to go. At the end of the day, our job is to provide service to the community, and if we're not keeping ourselves safe, we can't keep the community safe. So if anyone calls, we're all going to help.
Now, what about across the river? Do you have a cooperative agreement there as well?
Our ambulance service has a cooperative agreement with the authorities in Illinois. Obviously, if there's a major incident where someone in law enforcement officer is going to be has the propensity to be seriously injured, potentially killed, we would go over there and we would assist if requested.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a police chase. If a chase initiates or comes, if somebody is in a chase, is chasing or trying to escape, and is heading to Illinois, you continue to follow along, is that correct, and pursue?
We have our own departmental policies as to the reasons we would chase. We're not going to chase for misdemeanor offenses. Obviously, the risk doesn't outweigh the reward in that case. As we would go over to Illinois, we would cede that chase to either Henderson County or the Illinois State Police, since it's their jurisdiction. If necessary, based on the incident that's taking place, we would assist there. But once they pick up the chase, generally we're going to come back to Burlington.
Okay, so you try to basically geographically stay right within the Iowa side.
Yes,
is that right?
Absolutely.
All right, and obviously a cooperative agreement. You work with the sheriffs. All three departments work together, right?
We have a great working relationship with both Des Moines County Sheriff and West Burlington PD.
All right. If you had to sum up, what is the number one crime that has occurred during COVID-19? Is there a number one crime or a number one problem that you've had to face?
I don't know that any one crime has stuck out any more than the other. I think we have been pretty much middle of the road with everything. We've stayed consistent. I think the officers have spent more time, for lack of a better term, networking with the community. COVID, if it's done anything else, it has made us appreciate that human interaction. People just aren't being out. So when they do finally get out, we have the opportunity to see them, and they have the opportunity to see us just as people again.
Now, we've had a lot of places out in the East Coast and also on the West Coast, scattered around the country, large-scale parties that are just young people getting together, primarily young people mainly. There's no social distancing, and as far as police involvement in something like that, how does that work?
Well, obviously, we encourage people to follow the governor's proclamation. We want everyone to be safe, but from an enforcement perspective, we're not here to be the Gestapo and tell, you're 3.5 feet apart, you need to spread out. That's not our role. Our role is public safety as a whole.
Unless there's a problem within the gathering.
Unless an issue arises, correct.
And is it the same thing within a bar? That would be, I know that we mentioned the fact that social distancing in a bar is a very difficult thing, and just put it mildly, right?
Yeah, I think it's more of an educational process than everything. The Alcoholic Beverages Division out of Des Moines is in constant contact with the tavern owners, and they continue to educate them as to what those expectations are.
Okay, so but in terms of is there any enforcement that you are expected to or have the authority to do?
Yeah, we have not taken any enforcement action with respect to social distancing.
Okay, all right. So it's a matter of trying to be as discretionary as possible, but knowing unless there's specifically a crime or some action that is causing more of a problem. Then you take action then. We're going to take another break. We've got Jeff Klein with us. Our phone lines are open at 754-1490. We're going to talk about a couple other things, and we've got that coming up. Let's see. We got that coming up right now.
Welcome to the program.
This is the Dan Patrick Show.
Whose career would you rather have? Ryan Fitzpatrick, $71 million in the bank, 142 starts, 214 TDs, or Jay Cutler, $122 million, 153 starts, 227 TDs.
I think I would rather be Ryan Fitzpatrick. The fact that he has played on 6 different teams that have beaten Jacksonville.
Dan Patrick. The Dan Patrick Show.
Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Fox Sports 104.5 and 1360.
I'm Mary Oliver. I live in Ankeny, Iowa. I've paid into Social Security with every paycheck. We depend on it. So it's absolutely frightening when Senator Ernst talks about gutting Social Security behind closed doors.
I have talked about privatizing Social Security.
Joni Ernst looks out for Wall Street. She would put our retirement at risk. I am extremely disappointed in Joni Ernst. She's just not for us. Teresa Greenfield is tough enough to stand up for people like me. She would not back down.
I'm Teresa Greenfield. Social Security is something we've all earned after a lifetime of hard work. So when I see Washington politicians take millions from Wall Street and then threaten to privatize and cut Social Security, I say no way. I'll be fighting to sustain Social Security for generations to come. I'm Teresa Greenfield, running for Senate, and I approved this message, paid for by Teresa Greenfield for Iowa.
You have the power to stop the spread of seasonal flu. It's called an influenza vaccine, a flu shot.
The CDC recommends that everyone over 6 months old receive the vaccine every year. Now it's even more important to follow this advice as we continue fighting the spread of COVID-19 in addition to the flu. It is possible to have both respiratory illnesses at the same time. Although the influenza vaccine doesn't protect against COVID-19, it will help protect you and your family from the most common strains of seasonal flu. The CDC also recommends getting your flu shot by the end of October. It takes 2 weeks for the vaccine to reach its full protection. What else can you do to help stop the spread of seasonal flu? Ramp up your hand hygiene. Wash your hands often or use hand sanitizer when soap and water aren't available. Cover coughs and sneezes with your elbow instead of your hands. Keep your hands away from your eyes, nose, and mouth. Avoid large gatherings and stay home when you are sick. Please do your part to help stop the spread of seasonal flu this year. Start with getting your flu shot.
At the Burlington Area YMCA, they know we are better together. We hold each other accountable and have more fun when we're surrounded by our friends. September 28th through October 16th, when you join the Y with a friend, you will both save 20% on membership costs for as long as you both remain members. Enjoy free fitness classes, access to the pool, and state-of-the-art cardio and weight equipment. Join the Burlington Area YMCA. It's where you belong.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad traits.
And welcome back on the Peace Officers Show. Colin Letty is across the console, news director. We've got Jeff Klein. He is the acting police chief of the city of Burlington. This past week, we've had a release of more video.
Yeah.
Some video in the...
If I may?
Yeah, go ahead.
So this was first broken by the paper, The Hawkeye, that additional footage in the Marquise Jones incident was released by the lawyer representing Jones's family and mother in a suit against the city. It was additional body cam footage and an additional stationary security camera footage. Obviously, this happened well before you became acting chief, and I assume you were with the department at the time. I was curious if you had any further comments on that.
I wish I could. You're the fourth or fifth news outlet that's asked for a comment. The city's policy is that we don't comment on pending litigation, so
right.
Unfortunately I'd have to leave it at that.
Well, that was an unfortunate situation for pretty much everyone involved.
You know, I guess we've had a couple of issues that we've had that you've had to deal with, of course, in the department. But I guess in terms of morale, what's your overall view on the general morale of the department right now?
I think we have a great blend of both veteran and officers that maybe have 5 years or less on the job, and I think that blend allows those officers kind of to feed off of each other, which more than anything lends itself to that positive morale within the organization. Us officers that are older and have been here for a while, we see the excitement, the enthusiasm that the younger officers bring, and it kind of brings us back a little bit to appreciate the job itself. Not that any of the older officers don't appreciate it, but it's just nice to see that there are guys that are younger than us that have that fire, that enthusiasm that we had when we were 30 years younger.
Is there an effort to try to match up a seasoned officer with a newer officer?
During the course of our training program, the officers will ride with a field training officer. That's about a four-month process. It's four different steps. Those field training officers receive training from outside our department as to how they can mentor our new officers, departmental policies and procedures, report writing, communication, anything that you can imagine that we would have to do as a law enforcement officer. We try to provide them with as much knowledge as they can before they go out on their own.
I think of a map of the city, and I think of push pins going onto that map indicating incidents and problem areas. Is that something you still use? I'm going to guess probably you don't actually use push pins, though.
Believe it or not, we still do. We have depending on the number of new officers we have, they each have their own giant map. It's, I'm going to say, roughly 4 feet tall, 2 foot wide. And they will read through all of the reports that have taken place in the shifts prior to them, and we require them to put those push pins on the location on the map. That's one of the ways that we can teach them the streets in the city, and then they can determine, okay, if I need to go from point A to point B, what's the quickest route to do that. So sometimes old school is actually still as good as it was back then.
The places that get the most push pins, though, tend to get what more? They tend to get more, more cruisers going around those areas?
A lot of it is dependent on the incidents themselves. Obviously, if we have an increase in car burglaries that we can focus on, we'll send more officers in that area. But we never want to take away from what our general responsibility is,
okay,
is total community policing.
Okay, so community policing is a term we hear a lot of. We hear about also bicycle. You have bicycle police officers, right?
We do. It's a great program. Obviously, it doesn't get utilized a whole lot during inclement weather, during the wintertime months. The officer that leads our department is Officer Kenny Zahner. He is a 30-year veteran of the department, and he continues to be the face of our bike program. He loves to get out on the bike. From both an exercise and a community interaction standpoint, Kenny does a phenomenal job, and that's just invaluable.
You typically have two bikes out on together. Is that right?
Correct. As often as we can. We also utilize them for applicant testing during the course of the physical test, where we have them run a mile and a half. We can utilize them in parades. We can utilize them for other targeted patrols.
Of course, we haven't had many of any of those things, have we?
That is very true.
A lot of things that have been postponed, canceled, moved, et cetera. I guess as you look at the 2021, hopefully a much better year than 2020. Is that your goal, I guess?
I don't think it's going to be hard to beat 2020. I think anything that's an improvement on 2020 will make 2021 look great.
And again, when do you know in the process? Obviously, you would like to be the chief of police or the full-time chief of police in just sort of the acting police. Do you know when a decision? Do you know how long this process is going to last?
I know that the gentleman that's running the search firm is in Burlington today soliciting community comments about their desires for law enforcement in Burlington. The application process ends on October the 23rd. And then between the city manager and the city council, I think a decision would like to be made sometime before the end of the year.
Okay. And looking at the winter time, obviously, winter brings its own issues. The new police department or the new police department building, how big of a deal has that been in terms of improving the way that the department operates?
It's been night and day. The workflow from the old department to the old building to the new, the way everything is set up now, you start at your reports, you can add to your evidence, you can store your evidence. There's, for lack of a better term, like in math, you have an order of operations. The way our old building was situated, it was just that. It was an old building. So it was difficult for the officers to interact. It was difficult to have any type of normal flow. Now everything is laid out to where anybody can interact with anyone and the work can get done in a quicker fashion.
Has COVID made any difference in terms of how you are responding to anything? I mean, in terms of at the department, if somebody comes to the door and has to report, has COVID made any difference in that?
We closed the front portion of the building itself for about a month at the outset of COVID, just until we had a firm understanding of what exactly it was. Law enforcement on the whole, we don't have that luxury of not interacting with people. So it's been business as usual for us.
Okay. So more careful, but business as usual. And that's what you're hoping will continue. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Jeff Klein, acting police chief, running or hoping to be the full-time, not acting. Take the acting part out of it and just the police chief of the city of Burlington. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And coming up tomorrow, we've got Robin Johnson, and we're going to be Robin will be talking with Teresa Greenfield, believe it or not, tomorrow on The Talk Show.
Of news, sports, and public affairs excellence continues. News Radio 99.3 and 4.